Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by two special guests, Trinette Cunningham and Teresa Delibert. Trinette is the president of NAPS, which is the National Association of Personnel Services, a position that she's held for the last 9 years. She's been with NAPS for 23 years in total. Teresa is on the board of NAPS, and she's here to give us her perspective as a recruitment business owner and someone with 20 plus years in the industry. So I was keen to get Trinette and Teresa's perspectives from the vantage point of NAPS, which is, by the way, the oldest recruiting association in the United States. And they have thousands of people who've gone through their certification program. So really interested to hear their take on what are the trends, what are the challenges, and what are the opportunities for recruiters today. By the way, the next NAPS annual conference is taking place on October 27th to the 29th, and that will be in Litchfield Park, Arizona. You can learn more about that at www.naps360.org. Big welcome to Trinette and Teresa. Thank you both for being here. Okay, welcome to you both. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
Thank you for having
us. Mark. Yes, thank you.
All right, awesome. So just to set the scene, Trinette, could you just give us a brief overview of what NAPS is, what you guys offer, and what it's all about?
Sure. So NAPS, Mark, stands for the National Association of Personnel Services. We are one of the large, oldest industry associations. We were founded in 1961. So like every industry, Mark, there's an association. And so we like to say that NAPS is the home for recruiters that do blended services. So a little bit of the staffing and a little bit of the direct hire. And we really have a niche in the marketplace, I feel, in the industry, where our members, about 85% of them are from the smaller firms, smaller boutique firms, anywhere from like 1 to 15 employees. We do have heavily a lot of sole proprietors or 1 or 2, 3 firms. And what we found is even starting back in 1961, which I was not here then, there's definitely been a need for this kind of association. So I know you and I have spoken before about the different industry groups and associations and alliances. I like to say we don't compete. We kind of work together, and each group definitely serves a segment. So for NAPS, it's that smaller boutique niche firm. NAPS association, it's so important, Mark, and I can dive into some statistics on why each industry should really, your profession really should belong to an association. So we have different programs. One of the things I always like to say is the biggest, most important benefit in joining NAPS is the networking. Networking and not working, there's only one letter separating those two words. So really the networking is huge. It gives an opportunity for recruiters and staffing reps such as Teresa, our past MuniPass chair, to really just get together and collaborate and talk about best practices, industry trends, what's keeping them up at night. I know Teresa has a dog keeping her up at night. but it's just that opportunity for you to talk to your peers. And that's so important. We also offer professional development at NAPS. So what that means is we offer webinar series, what we call Lunch and Learn. We also so that's our webinars. We do some white papers. We have newsletters. We have a monthly newsletter. And then we also partner with Littler Mendelson. They're one of the largest staffing and recruiting law offices in the country. So we work with them, and we have a quarterly newsletter, a legal newsletter that just goes over all the federal legal updates in our industry. And then we also have a certification newsletter. Something else that we do is we have some advocacy, and that's also a really important part of belonging to any association in your industry. So if there's any kind of federal legislation that we need to make our members aware so they can, you know, start calling their congressmen or senators. So we focus on that advocacy as well. And then access to resources. So we have what's called an Ask the Expert. So if you have any kind of question, I think, Teresa, we had one just this week asking about commission. So, you know, sometimes it feels, especially in this post-COVID environment, that you're kind of on an island by yourself. So we have that service where if you have any kind of question, obviously industry related, just shoot us an email and we will send it out to our universe. And then lastly, I think the most important benefit that any association, but in particular NAPS, offers is that credibility in the workforce. I often find it astounding, Mark, that anybody can theoretically say, hey, I am a recruiter today because I just found two of my best friends' jobs. And they think that that makes them a recruiter. And in this industry, we really have no requirements. There's no degree required. There's no certification required. I always tell people, I would say about 30% of the calls that I receive as the NAPS president is about the certification. And what that does, I always tell people, would you work with an accountant that is not a CPA? Or would you work with a realtor that does not have the real estate license? And when I tell people, we're actually going to start a marketing campaign called Did You Know? And I'm working with our legal counsel, just throwing out some Did You Know? That all these pitfalls that you can enter if you're not aware of all the federal laws impacting our association or industry. So I think that is probably, and Teresa, you can jump in as well, but I think that's probably our most strongest value add proposition for our members, is just giving that credibility in the workforce where we don't have it. So, and those certifications, we have two. The first one is certified temporary staffing, and the other one is certified personnel consultant.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks, Trinette. And that was a great overview. There's obviously a lot that you guys offer and that you have going on. It's interesting that your kind of segment is the smaller and medium-sized recruiting and staffing and search firms, because that's the same segment that we serve. So it tends to be the solo practitioners up to, you know, companies with maybe 20 to 25 people. And those small boutiques that you mentioned. So there's a good crossover there. So Teresa, what's your relationship with NAPS? How did you get involved?
Well, I started working, this is my second career. So when I started in this industry, I started working with a woman who was on the board at NAPS. And she insisted that we all had to have our certification. So within 1 year, I had to be certified. So I got my certification through NAPS in 2002. And then in 2008, she decided to retire. And I just moved on and I had my certification. I kept going. And then Trinette reached out to me and asked me to get involved. And I stayed, you know, I obviously kept my certification up and I stayed in as a member, but not involved. So she reached out to me and I got involved. And what a difference it made. Coming from a team and moving on to, you know, just, I literally, like I told you, I had 18 hours to decide. She was leaving. She had dinner with me at 7 o'clock and left for England the next morning at 9 and said, hey, let me know before I leave. And I was like, okay. And, it wasn't a planning thing. I just picked up my desk and moved it home and, started working one day.
Okay, Teresa, this is it. I'd love to hear the story. Can we just back up a second? How did you first get into recruiting? I ask all my guests that because I like hearing, like, so what was your entry into this world?
I was in retail. I was a retail merchandise manager, and my job was eliminated when I was like 31. So I said, hey, let me go find a job. And so I just started to apply for all these jobs as buyers, merchandisers. And I'm like, they're boring. Like, I liked buying because I liked the merchandise. You know, I liked fashion. I didn't want to buy pieces. So I answered an ad one day for an account manager, and it was in the recruiting industry.
Amazing. And then, so you answered an ad, and then what happened?
I got hired. It was not the right place for me, but it was the right industry. So I'm grateful for that. And then I landed with... 2 years later, I landed with a firm that was involved in NAPS, and I've been in NAPS since.
How did you know this was the right industry for you? I love digging into people's motivations and really, because let me know what you guys think, but I do find this definitely isn't the industry for everyone, right? And it takes a certain kind of person. you might call them a certain kind of neurotic or, you know, unique person to have a long-term career in this crazy business. What was it about recruiting that appealed to you?
It's different every single day. I came from the retail. You never know what your customer is going to ask of you, give you. You never know what your day is going to be like, right? It kind of runs you. You don't run it. And I think recruiting for me was, I started out and I wasn't sure, you know, I was selling. And what I loved was that I could help people and still make a lot of money.
Right.
And so it kind of fit both sides, right? You can make money while helping people.
So then you kind of rushed through it. I'd like to hear the story about how you took over your book of business. So your owner of the firm you worked was retiring. Why was there this urgent deadline for you to decide if you wanted to buy your book of business?
That's my question to her. We had a plan. I said, she told me when I'm ready, I'll let you know. I said, give me 6 months to plan. She goes, okay. And I believe it was the last week or the first week of October, and her rent was going to go up at the end of October. So she decided it was time. So here, I'm leaving, you know, I'm leaving tomorrow morning. Let me know before I go so we can get things moving.
Wow. And so obviously you did decide to go for it. And how's that decision worked out for you?
Well, I'm still in business.
And she's smiling too. And she's not all gray yet.
How long ago was this, Teresa?
2008.
Okay. Oh, wow. So that was maybe a rough timing for you to take over the business.
It was.
I don't know.
Terrible.
What your experience was. 2008 and 2009 for me was a shocker. That was a really stressful period of time. So this is maybe a good way of segueing. What was it like sort of becoming your own boss in 2008? And how did you make that work?
Well, I obviously didn't have a whole lot of planning, so I just kind of jumped in head first. But I think that's what recruiters do anyway. You know, when we take a job order, we go head first. We just jump in and do it. So I did that. I definitely made some mistakes. Certainly didn't have a plan, and I just ran with it. And, you know, I just had to see the bumps as they came. I had a client that I was working with at McCall Staffing, and it had been like one of my biggest issues with my employer was that she had allowed one of my clients to be 75% of my business. And I was like, this can't happen. This can't happen. I've got it. You know, I've got to segregate it out. And she didn't want to let go of any of the money, obviously. And every time she brought someone in to take it, it started to fail. So she just kept pushing it back. And they changed hands in 2008, and I lost my business. So I had to start all over again. So I lost my biggest source of income, and I had to start over, which a lot of recruiters had to, and especially in 2008.
That's a painful lesson. And I had the exact same thing. I didn't have 75% of my business with one account, but I had it with about three or four. And three of them I lost in 2008, like within 1 month, I lost like most of my revenue. And so this is maybe one to bounce back to you, Trinette, because I think that we're seeing a strange dynamic in the marketplace right now, right? With a lot of uncertainty and, you know, definitely a hiring slowdown in, say, 2023 compared to the previous couple of years. And what are you guys seeing from your members' point of view? What are they sharing with you? And what support is available from NAPS in order to help people get through tough times? Now, I know that a lot of recruiters are still doing fantastic right now, but we've heard anecdotally that a lot of people are struggling as well. So I don't know if it's sector dependent or what? But what are you guys seeing and how are you responding to that?
I think you touched on it a little bit, Mark. I think that it really depends on the sector. I know that, you know, the financial industry, they are experiencing an accelerated growth. I don't believe, and I think this is based upon ITR research, and we had partnered with them, NAPS has partnered with them. I don't think that there's any sectors or industries that we would say, or ITR would say, is in a recovery cycle, but there definitely are industries that are performing better than others. I know that the housing, and I believe it's the wholesale trade, they're in a recovery mode, but I definitely feel, and Teresa, maybe you can jump in as well, but the financial industry, I think that is the one that sees the most accelerated growth, at least. As far as how that translates, Mark, into where NAPS comes into play, again, I'm going to keep going back to our members are not members, but just the general public. They want to know, how can I stand out from all the other recruiters? And they're driven by the ever changing landscape of the federal laws. I mean, and Teresa, you and I spoke about this recently. I mean, something that you were allowed to ask in regards to salary requirements, say 6 months ago, may very well be different today. So they're really looking to NAPS, all the industries, just not the ones that are having a slow recovery or that are seeing an accelerated growth, but they're looking at NAPS to help them avoid all those legal pitfalls that they that might not have been there, Mark, say like 6 months ago or even 3 months ago. So Teresa, I know that you had some insight on that as well, but so to give specifics on what NAPS can do, we're here to help you with navigating with that ever-changing landscape. We do offer, like I said, the certification program. That is an in-depth program, and I encourage everyone who's listening, if you do not have your certification, get it, because it will pay in dividends. You know, when I took it about 4 years ago, and like I said, Mark, my background is in association management. I do not come from the recruiting and staffing industry. And I was, wow. I remember when I opened up the manual, and it's, I think, like 215 pages, I was just shocked at how much there is to know. So I think that's where we can help serve our members the best, is just keeping them updated, because there's, yes, we can provide them with different resources and different partners, you know, ATS partners, like, hey, this is a recommendation. Go ahead and check this out. The one thing that they, though, need help with is just keeping abreast of all the legalities. So that's where we help our NAPS members. And I have to say that is where the most interest that I'm seeing with people who are wanting to find out about NAPS. You know, maybe a couple years ago, right after the COVID, there was people who were so interested in coming to the conference. They wanted to have that networking. They did not have it for a year and a half. And so they wanted to, you know, how can I come to the conference? I need to talk to people. I've been talking to my cat or my dog. I need to talk to people. Now it's, okay, what's going on with all these federal laws that are changing? So it's definitely been a shift in what people are looking at our association for.
So you mentioned another, did you say ITR?
ITR research, yes. Have you read anything about them or heard?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you definitely have to check them out. They do have some free subscriptions as well that you can sign up for. But yes, we had partnered with ITR just to have an idea of forecasting in the specific industries.
Fantastic. And then do you publish that research for your members?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. We have, we publish that research. And like I said, Mark, that partnership was a couple years ago. So we would publish that research. We try to stay very fresh, and we don't want to be stale as an association. So we partner and focus our research with different groups and different entities. And right now we're working with what's called the WBC, the Women's Business Collaborative. And that's who we're now working with on having white papers and doing various surveys and benchmarking surveys. The WBC is comprised of different association and industry groups. I think there's, what, Teresa, about five of us. So there's NAPS, ASA, TechServe Alliance, SIA, And I'm not certain if NPA Worldwide has jumped on board. I know I've talked to their new president, Carrie, about coming in. But yeah, it's a great opportunity for our groups to, what we then do, Mark, is it's focused on more of the women's in the workplace, in the staffing and recruiting industry. But what the beauty about this is that all of those industry groups and associations work together, and they ask their members. We share the survey with our NAPS universe, which not only consists of the conference registrants, our NAPS members, but everyone who has been certified. So we share that information. We share that polling and those questions, and all the other groups as well. So I say that the feedback and that we get on those surveys, it's pretty impressive, the research that we do.
And so can you say any more about WBC and how your partnership with them works and what the benefit is in terms of women in recruiting?
There's so many things that they're doing, but right now the one that is standing out is that they're putting together basically a funding conference for funding women. And so I think it's September 4th and 5th in New York City. They're trying to pair women looking for capital with people who are looking to fund women in capital. So they've got, I think yesterday the number was 200 attendees looking for, and on both sides, just over. So it's a pretty equal pairing. Yep, it's going to be their first thing. And it was one of our member benefits. I sent it, I sat on the meeting and I immediately said, hey, Trinette, you got to send this out. And who do we have? Who do we know that wants to go? I know that a lot of the people from the WBC are going to meet just to get in touch with each other and meet. But I thought, wow, for women looking for backing, that's a huge benefit. And we can extend that to our members.
And one of the other things, Teresa, I read recently, I know that, and this is so, I'm always astounded when we talk about gender inequality and pay disparity and just the C-suite, how many CEOs are women. And I think, Teresa, it's actually down a little from 2022. I think it's only, 10.4% of all CEOs at that C-level suite, Mark, are women. However, for our industry, staffing and recruiting, we fare a little better. Teresa, is that I think we're like around 14%? I mean, something.
I don't have the number off the top of my head, but yes.
But so as a whole, our industry, I would say, is a little more progressive, if you will, Mark. We are definitely ahead of the curve. But what we do with those other groups is, we want to make people aware that pay disparity, gender inequality, DEI, all that stuff, it really, really impacts our industry and where we stand compared to other industries as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this funding conference sounds like a brilliant idea. What I didn't realize until recently, I had a lady on the podcast called Helen McGuire, who started and then exited her business. And I didn't realize that there was what's called a funding gap, which is that men who are entrepreneurs get a lot more funding than women who are entrepreneurs. So that sounds really cool. Are you open to fresh ideas that could increase your billings by 200 to 300% in 6 to 12 months? Then join us in St. Pete this October for an unforgettable event. You'll learn our proven framework for building a 7-figure business that you love. You'll also discover advanced strategies and exclusive insights that aren't available anywhere else. Plus, you'll leave with a personalized step-by-step roadmap for getting from where you are now to where you'd ideally like to be. For details and to register, visit recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Teresa, in terms of your last 15 years that you've been on your own and building your own business, looking back, what do you think you are most proud of having accomplished?
Still being here.
Right. Absolutely. That's
yes.
That's a success in itself.
Definitely. Making it, restarting, several times. I mean, we've had a few recessions and made it through the COVID pandemic when my clients pretty much shut down. I'm in New York State, so we all know what happened in New York. We were just closed up for quite some time and we made it through and I pivoted. And I credit a lot of that to being a member of NAPS. Trinette did a great job keeping us all connected, providing resources, getting us all involved. I think that's probably the one thing that's kept me going is knowing that I have the community and the collaboration of NAPS, because I felt like I was on an island all by myself, right? And for a few years, I wasn't really active, and I just don't think I even knew what was going on. And when I started to get involved, I have a whole team. You know, I might be a solopreneur, I might be a solo recruiter, but I have a telephone. I have, you know, I can reach out to anybody in the organization. They're going to give you the time of day. They're going to be a mentor. They're going to be a resource. And so, yeah, I think that my just succeeding in this industry.
Totally. Yeah, I agree 100%. So, in terms of the, so how many members are there in NAPS?
So we have about 300 companies, and some of those companies that are represented are Lake Teresa, where it's a sole proprietor. Some of the companies could be up to, like I said, 15, 25. So when I say that number, give or take, Mark, 300, we don't have, everyone's on their own anniversary date. So that number can fluctuate depending upon the time of year. Some of those companies could have up to 5 members, and some are, like I said, just with Teresa, a sole practitioner, sole proprietor. So we're about 300. That, however, Mark, does not represent the entire universe of people who are involved in NAPS. So we do have, like I said, I sound like a broken record, certified, but we have the NAPS certified, and that is a few thousand, a couple thousand. I want to say since 1961, 20,000 people have taken the certification. Now, I want to say about a couple thousand still maintain their what we call CEUs. So you have to take 20 hours each year of education to maintain your CEUs. So so we have that group as well. So I would say about 5,000 are currently having their certifications. Yeah.
It's definitely a huge benefit for me. I work with small business, which not everybody does. So my clients are independents as well. So they may be a financial planner that was doing great, and now he just opened his own practice. Most recently, I was working with one of mine I've been working with for 20 years, and he didn't like the salary information I came back with. He was like, no. He goes, did you verify that? I said, what? I said, no, I didn't. And he goes, well, how do you know that's what they make? I go, it doesn't matter. It's illegal in New York to ask how much somebody makes. So you're not going to know. And he's like, what? And there's a hefty fee that goes with it if somebody complains or turns you in. So he was like, you know, I said, that's just how it is. And so I sent him, you know, I clipped a screenshot and sent it to him. And he wrote back and was like, well, I guess thank you. But I mean, it's the difference. I mean, especially New York. I mean, we have a lot. I mean, we definitely have a lot of changing in New York. It's different. We're probably just behind California for the number of changing laws, employment laws, but even federally, like when New York City does something, I'm 8 hours away by a car, right? I just do it because it's going to come to me eventually.
Fantastic. So apart from the dynamic and ever-changing legal environment as far as regulation of hiring and recruiting, either from your research or just from anecdotally from talking to other members of NAPS, are there any other either trends, challenges, patterns that you guys see emerging in our industry?
I see a lot. So, man, we can spend like the next half hour. One of the biggest one, and I know Mark, you and I briefly talked about this a few days ago, is AI. But specifically what I would say, and I know I believe, I think it was Deloitte that came out with this statistic, over 36% of recruiters say that AI has made their jobs better. And, you know, people say, well, exactly how, you know, we all know how to, use AI on a very basic level. And so people think, oh, okay, AI, I'm going to make my Facebook post sound a little better, a little more clever, if you will, with the help of AI. But specifically in our industry, what I'm hearing is using AI to, say, write a job description, what it's doing, it's removing that bias that some people have. So you might not know when you're writing a job description that you have some bias in writing that could impact, say, if women or minorities are applying for your job. So that is one of the things that a big trend, benefit expansion, what that really, I don't know if you've heard about that, but going beyond, oh, your eye and dental. So we're now looking at the trends with benefit expansions is really looking at the whole wellness and mental health. So, and this has taken a really big turn, and it's become so important ever since the post-COVID environment that we live in. So seeing more wellness programs being an expanded benefit, offering yoga and things of that nature. Mental health is a huge trend as well.
I 100% agree. I'm sure all of our listeners would agree that the biggest thing to happen in our industry and probably in the world in the last 18 months or so has been the advance of AI. And it's something which people can have fears or concerns about, and rightly so. At the same time, as it can be hugely beneficial. So it is very much a double-edged sword. And so our message to our clients is, look, this is happening whether we like it or not. And so, you know, let's embrace it and really hone our skills at how to leverage AI in order to improve every aspect of your business. And so my two colleagues, Leanne and Julie, put together a 12-week program, which is called Recruit Smarter with AI. So if any listeners want to check that out, they can go to recruitmentcoach.com/AI and learn more about that. Teresa, what else did you want to add in terms of trends, challenges, and opportunities that you're seeing?
I think that one of the other major trends is data, right? And we've always been a metrics-driven environment. And I think now it's almost on demand, right? It's almost consistent, immediate. And I think it helps us to really strategize more and be more proactive than we could in the past. You know, it would be, you know, count how many calls did you make today and, you know, do this. And, you know, anybody in recruiting knows their metrics piece. I think that's huge. And I think that all of the systems we have, our ATSs are now being paired with AI, which is helping you. And it's almost like on demand, you know, and as you said, AI is a huge fear to some recruiters, and it's a double-edged sword, right? But some recruiters think, oh, we're going to be, you know, replaced by AI. I don't think so. I think it's going to give us more of an opportunity in the marketplace. And the other thing that I see is that for me, passive candidates are much more important. The relationships that you're building with them beforehand, right? So if someone's looking, you're going to end up having that, you know, war, you know, salary war. You're going to have all these going back and forth. You know, we used to see it in the executive level, right? We'd see passive candidates being, and I think now it's as important to do it on the lower level openings that you're working with, job orders on administrative or even, you know, mid management levels, just having those relationships and working those passive candidates.
And I know another one of the other things, Mark, if I can, automation is also a really big trend I'm seeing with our NAPS members. I know in this year, recruiters are going to automate more traditionally in-person tasks, such as, you know, candidate screenings and initial interviews. And I don't know if you've heard of, I think it's called asynchronous video technology. It's the software that allows applicants to, you know, film themselves answering any questions and whatever. The beauty about that is with that, I want to say that it has, it's been able to change the time of identifying a candidate from, I think it was like 14 days to now 3.5 days. So that automation is definitely helping our NAPS members as well do their job better.
Well, that's interesting. So do you know people then who are using, I know that technology is available, but I don't know anyone who's actually using it as an integral part of their hiring process.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I don't have the metrics exactly. I will after the conference. And we are going to be talking at the conference. And I know that we're going to address the conference a little later. So I don't want to get ahead of myself. But really quickly, we are having, it's a masterclass, an AI masterclass, the day before the conference on that Sunday. And it's going to be about a 4-hour. It's going to be broken down into 3 segments. Don't ask me what those 3 segments are right now. But it's on our website, but we will be having that AI discussion. So we'll probably have more intel exactly how many are using that in those instances.
Okay, interesting. So yeah, in terms of the mixed reviews, I think that there is adoption in terms of people's willingness or comfort level of going through that kind of interview process where it is asynchronous and they are answering questions over video without an other human being to respond to. It'll be interesting to see how that develops. How we see most of our clients using video combined with automation is more in terms of reaching out to either clients or candidates and sending them personalized videos, for example. So that's been huge for our clients. And they're finding, not always, but many find that they do get a great response rate when they reach out with a video because it stands out from all the other emails and LinkedIn messages people are getting. And B, there's it's more human, it's more personal. They can see you and they can hear your voice, which can have a greater impact than just reading a short LinkedIn message. So that's how we're seeing video combined with automation, and
I have to say, the video with the interviewing. My daughter applied to med school 2-3 years ago, and I had set aside a budget for her to go and for these in person interviews for med school. You know, we were going to go to Seattle, we were going to go to Florida, and all these things. And this was two years ago. And all of her interviews, her med school interviews, were done over video. And obviously, there was nobody asking these questions. The question would come up, and she was able to answer that. So to me, it's just very interesting to see it from that perspective instead of, you know, from the association perspective, to see how that's changing. And, you know, from a medical school perspective, it has saved them so much time that they're really able to, you know, have a greater eyes on the candidate or their med student applicants. They're able to get much more feedback, and the decision-making process is sped up a lot more as well. And then one other thing on the trends, and I'll shut my mouth, is also social recruiting. I've seen a trend, and Teresa, maybe you have seen this as well, but not as much focused on LinkedIn as we were a couple years ago. So I think that they're using our clients are using other platforms. I want to say, I don't know if you've seen this, but Verizon has really stepped away from using LinkedIn for recruiting, and they're focusing on Instagram. So I think it's also going to where their potential candidates are going to be. So I have to look at it. I think their marketing on Instagram, their recruiting marketing, is something about think you can crack this code. If so, apply at Verizon, hashtag software and stuff like that. So that's just one other trend that I'm seeing. Everybody was so LinkedIn. But yeah, I'm seeing a mix of it. Before, people weren't really looking at Facebook. And now I see that shift kind of going elsewhere outside of LinkedIn. Teresa, are you experiencing that all, having to use different social marketing to meet, you know, the new generation? I sound old when I say that.
I think with Gen Zs are hitting the workforce, right? This year, you know, right around now. And they don't use Facebook. They don't use LinkedIn. They use
TikTok.
Insta.
Insta, TikTok, exactly. Snapchat.
And just when a lot of people were, just when a lot of our members were like, okay, I'm very LinkedIn savvy, we're switching it up on you again. Now you have to go on TikTok and have to have your Instagram channel and all this other stuff. So, but it's ever changing. So that's a big trend that I would like to talk more about at maybe next year's NAPS conference.
Yeah, it definitely is. I see it. Even my nieces and nephews, that they're like, you got to get on TikTok. I'm like, what am I going to do on TikTok?
You can make a cat video and dog channel and stuff like that.
Well, you say that, but one of our clients, Darcy, so shout out to Darcy, did a presentation for our other members about how she uses TikTok. And she's built, I think she has, I don't know, 200,000 or 300,000 followers. She's had millions of views on her TikTok channel, and she's made placements from it as well. So I do think it depends what your demographic is of the candidates, especially that you want to target. Just one more thing on AI before we move on. You guys should definitely consider John Crone as a speaker for one of your events. I'll send you a link to his details because I had him on the podcast back in November, and it was all about AI. He's a really, really smart guy, PhD in machine learning, and talking about how AI is going to impact recruiting, is already, but will, you know, increasingly impact on recruiting. Really interesting conversation, which I won't even attempt to replicate because, you know, the level that this guy's at is insane, but he's also a really engaging speaker. So
love it. We have to get you as well.
Yes, I would love to. We've tried. The timing hasn't worked, but
this is 2025. This is what we'll do. Is the year. I have not found the 2025 location or dates. So, Mark, you tell us when you're available, and we're going to build our conference around you.
Fantastic. I would love to. We're going to talk about your conference in a second. Just before that, in terms of trends that I'm seeing, and I want to just sanity check this with you guys from your experience, Teresa, out there in the trenches, actually running a recruiting business, and as well as all of your colleagues at NAPS, is I definitely feel a real shift from it being a heavily candidate-driven market back to more of a client-driven market in most industries. And what I'm basing that on is we run coaching calls Monday through Thursday for our clients. And we have a model called the six pillars of a seven-figure recruitment business. And so the six pillars are clients, candidates, team, operations, strategy, and marketing. Okay, so those are six dimensions or areas of your business that you need to optimize. And so every week I'm doing a coaching call on each of those topics, each of those pillars, if you like. And probably about 18 months ago, the most popular one was the candidate one. Everyone was like, had lots of jobs and, you know, finding candidates was the thing. And now it's absolutely the opposite. The busiest coaching call is the client one, where people are learning about client acquisition strategies. And the candidate one is not very busy right now. So what's your take on that in terms of what you're experiencing?
I think it's I'm still seeing it's we're short on candidates, but also you're working harder for your clients. They seem to think they can do it themselves. I get a lot of people coming after they've tried it and said, "Oh dear," you know. Even my clients that I've been working with for 20 years, you know, are like, "Oh, I ran an ad on LinkedIn, I ran an ad on Indeed, and I didn't get anything. I didn't get anything good." Yeah, that's the difference. It took me too long. So I think that we are, you know, the candidates are trying, or the clients are trying to do it themselves, or they're, you know, right now I think they're a little hesitant. I think our economic and our political scene is making them hesitant, but I think they'll come around. They always do come around. But yes, I think it's a little bit tighter. But candidates are still tight too.
Talk to me about the NAPS conference coming up in October.
Sure. It's October 27th through the 29th. So it's a 2.5-day conference. It's going to be in the Wigwam Resort, and that's in Litchfield Park. And that's about 20 minutes outside of Arizona. Our conference is, I think it's just a great event. Recruiters, wow. They are up at 7 in the morning and they are out until 2 in the morning. And there is a saying, Teresa, I know that one of our past presidents would always say about, what is it, howling with the, if you howl with the owls, you have to soar with the eagles. Or I'm probably butchering that. But you get the gist of it. And that's really is indicative of what the NAPS attendees are. I mean, they're like sponges, Mark. They just want to learn. And I'm always like, okay, this, you're going on your like 7th hour of learning and talking and hearing people talk to you and stuff. And they come out and they're enthusiastic. I mean, I'm in awe of their willingness and their eagerness to learn. And then that is matched with their willingness and eagerness to network and just socialize. And it's just a really great experience. It's a great conference. I've been, like I said, I'm going to date myself. I started doing association management 30 years ago when I was 5 years old. And I have to say, with all the different association events, you recruiters and staffers, it's amazing, the energy. And so anyway, the conference, we typically have about 250 attendees. And we also have about, I try to keep a ratio for exhibits to like about a 1-12, 1-15% ratio. So it's not going to be so vendor centric. So the beauty about this is we might have just say 10, 15, 20 exhibitors. But the people that they are talking to are going to be your owners and decision makers. And that is really a shift, Mark, from what it was, you know, before COVID, because we had companies sending teams. They might send 8 or 9 other recruiters. And just because of, you know, the shift in the market as far as being able to send your teams out and having to stay in the office and whatever, what we're seeing is we have quality over quantity now. So if you're an exhibitor, if you are an ATS, if whatever, marketing, come to the NAPS conference. We still have exhibits space available. We're relatively cheap. I think we are, I don't want to say cheap, economically feasible. Does that sound better? In comparison to the other industry opportunities that they may have. And you're going to talk to those decision makers, those owners. That's who is there. So like I said, it's about 250 people. We have an owner manager workshop. Like I said, the day before this year, where that owner manager workshop is going to be a masterclass in AI. And then also what we have at the same time is we have our immersion class, and that is going to be instructed by someone from Littler Legal, and they're going to go over all of the federal legal updates that we keep talking about. And then after that 3-hour class, you can sit for the exam with a pencil and paper. We also offer it to people who had their who've taken their certifications a couple years ago, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Come in, if you don't want to go to the AI masterclass, come into that certification immersion class and just sit and listen to all the updates. We then kick it off with, we have receptions every evening, Sunday, Monday. Then on Monday, we have 3 concurrent sessions going on. So we have speakers such as Barb Bruno, Tom Erb, Jamie Schwartz. Kara Wenham was on there. I don't know if she's going to be able to attend this year or not, but we also have about 50, we try to have 50% of our speakers be new speakers that we have vetted, but that have not been in front of the NAPS audience. And then we are trying to just add little value added to the conference as well. And what I mean by that, this year we're going to have a headshot booth. So if you want to get your headshot for LinkedIn updated, we have a photographer there all day on Monday for you to go ahead and get your LinkedIn headshot, or if you want to have your team headshot, come there. We're going to take care of you. And then on Tuesday, or maybe Monday or Tuesday, I forget which day it is, we also have a Women in Staffing and Recruiting Luncheon, which I'm so excited about. And that's going to be moderated by Barb. And what we're going to do, I don't want to get too much into it because I don't want to reveal all the surprises, but we're going to be identifying three women in our industry that we want to hear them tell their stories. We want to hear them tell their challenges, how they got involved in it, what they're seeing, and what we as NAPS can do to improve their experience. So that's kind of a... Oh, and I have to say, we have on the first day, we do have our keynote speaker, and we always go for an Olympian athlete. Last year, we had Shannon Miller, the gymnast from 1996 Olympics, 92 Olympics. The year before that, we had Brianna Scurry. She was the goalkeeper for the U.S. women's soccer team. And then we had Amy Van Dyken, the Olympic swimmer, who sadly had an ATV accident, and she's paralyzed. But and this year we're having Dan O'Brien, and you might recall Dan O'Brien. He was the decathlon Olympic champion in the 96 Olympics. We feel that matching those Olympic stories of overcoming adversity is very relatable to our industry. So I'm really excited to hear about Dan O'Brien's story, because I don't know if you recall, but in the 92 Olympics, it was a Dan and Dave commercial. There was two Olympians that they were going to go at it, and there was this big marketing campaign, and Dan O'Brien failed to qualify for the 92 Olympics. He missed the pole vault and he finished 11th place or whatever. So he's going to talk about, you know, here I am on a global stage. There's a Reebok or Nike or one of them created a whole marketing campaign against Dan versus Dave. And here there was no Dan. So he's going to talk about overcoming, and that kind of messaging really resonates with our industry. And then our day two keynote is somebody within the industry. And this year it's going to be Danny Cahill. He'll be speaking once again.
All right. Danny's always a great speaker. The other person, I think you've got, don't you have Matt Walsh?
Oh, yes, well? Matt Walsh, my buddy. I have to give Matt Walsh a shout out if he's going to be listening, from Blue Signal. Yes, they are actually having I don't want to say a user conference, but they're having a company-wide mini conference, if you will, in conjunction with ours. So the day before, they're going to be there. Yeah.
Yeah, so Matt's been on the podcast a couple of times, and he's actually come and done a private Q&A for our members as well. He's a great guy, really smart business person. So, wow, I wish I could be there. I definitely want to come in 2025. Okay. So
let's
figure that out. Okay, sounds great. Well, listen, thank you both for being here on the Resilient Recruiter podcast. Teresa, pleasure meeting you for the first time.
Nice to meet you.
Hopefully we'll speak again. And Trinette, let's keep in touch.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out some of my other episodes. You'll see one or two suggested episodes on the screen now.